Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman. And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. Ryan Sexton along with John Osher. Bye week blues here. Well, not really for us because we've got the mics. The big mouths are gone. Well, okay, one big mouth is gone. Baselli is off somewhere. Lagerman is shooting things on his property up somewhere. And it leaves the floor completely open for you to talk Jaguars football. And I like to say in a very intellectual light tonight. What do you think?
Or in other words, 2 hours of bad radio, right?
No, I think it'd be 2 hours. I think the potential is there for it to be outstanding the midpoint of the season. You can join us, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Here's what you won't hear. Come on.
No, you probably don't hear
you
that.
You won't hear that. So, let's start with this little bit of news. Mike Sims-Walker, injured reserve. Brian Rabisky, released by the Cleveland Browns earlier this week, is in his place. 6'3", 210, second-round pick. But much like Mike Sims-Walker, if you get him off the street, your expectations can't be overwhelming for
him. But, you know, he's a guy who obviously 3 years ago people thought pretty highly of and thought he could come in and be a, you know, be a guy who could contribute for you. So, you know, this to me makes more sense than the Mike Sims-Walker move because you're actually bringing in a guy that, you know, maybe he'll show you something that he didn't show you last year. Because clearly Mike, you know, good guy and they thought he might give him a lift, but there was a reason they didn't re-sign him.
Sure.
And, you know, they didn't really try to, and it was beyond money. He had been determined, you know, that they had better options moving forward, and they did. They brought him back on a flyer, and, you know, now he's hurt, it didn't work out, so you move on.
Well, look, if you're going to say anything about Rabisky, you can say that the last couple of years he's played with Jake Delhomme.
Sure.
Who never had a strong arm to begin with and was playing in the cold weather. He was very successful in Carolina. And then Colt McCoy, who is not a strong arm and a rookie at that. And, again, for what it's worth, perhaps a change of scenery in a young, strong-arm quarterback changes things, and he's more productive over the final eight games.
Well, and frankly, you're at the point of the season where, you know, all I get are emails, why don't we bring in a receiver, bring in a receiver, bring in a receiver? Well, you know, they're bringing in a receiver, and you never know. Somebody might be a fit. You know, and Ben Coleman in 1996 comes to mind, a former second-round draft pick released by a team. Came in, took him a while to fit in, and he was a decent player. So that's what you got to do at this point of the season. Bring in a guy, see if he fits. If he doesn't fit, you move on.
You know, we're going to get the question tonight, so let's answer it right out of the gate. Well, the Raiders signed T.J. Houshmandzadeh, who is much more accomplished than Brian Rabisky. Why didn't the Jaguars go and take a look at T.J. Houshmandzadeh?
Slow.
Yes.
I mean, you know, and again, Rabisky is a guy who you could conceive as having upside. Maybe you're looking at a guy in his third year that you haven't seen everything out of, maybe with a chance, maybe in a different offense, maybe he fits. So, you know, again, as you said, this is not one to put on a par with a February free agent signing that you think is going to come in and make a huge impact. But, you know, you'll see what happens.
Well, and Houshmandzadeh is an older player.
Sure.
And the Ravens had him last year and elected not to bring him back. So, at some point, you're looking for
young guys. He couldn't
run
3 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and
he always benefited the possession guy across from Chad Ochocinco.
And a good solid player, but you know, again, at this point in the season, you're looking for guys who might eventually become guys that you build forward with.
Right.
And I don't think you put Houshmandzadeh in that category.
355-NFL 1-800-355-6351. Let's stay on the receivers just for a moment. Because it's been a pet peeve of mine. I sat and I watched some of the tape with the coach last night. I watched some of it with Lagerman. We had some of these plays. The routes that these guys are running.
I was going to say, that's probably not a real fun experience for you.
Yeah, no, well, they're sloppy.
Right.
And I'll use the
very
example.
Very sloppy.
You know, Mike Sims-Walker ran an in cut there on a slant, and maybe the knee was bothering him. Now that he's on IR, who knows, although he practiced and he played last week. So,
but it's not just him.
Yeah, no. Jason Hill, same thing. Right. You know, inside the red zone, didn't even try to sell the outside move as he came in on the slant, and the cornerback easily broke it up.
Maybe. Also cut too late. You know, should have cut her. I mean, and you can go on.
You don't have to be a receiver's coach to see that this is a group that is not getting better.
No, it has gotten, I would say.
Not maximizing their potential.
Again, I didn't see him last year, so I don't know from on site, you know, how much worse or better they are. But my understanding is they've regressed fairly significantly even since training camp.
Look, this has been a receiving corps that has been disappointing since Jimmy Smith retired. They just have never been able to find that guy. But at least in the past, you didn't see the routes that looked that poor.
Well,
and Mike, I don't want to pick on all of them. I mean, Mike Thomas seems to be doing all right.
But, most of the time, sure.
But Cecil Shorts is not making progress.
No.
And the two guys that, you know, Mike Sims-Walker and Jason Hill, I mean, Jason Hill has talent. You know, not great significant talent, but enough talent to catch a touchdown pass.
They thought in the offseason, you know, and if I've gotten one email is about why didn't Gene Smith address receivers, I've gotten enough, you know, to fill the entire in basket, and you can't fill an online in basket. So, I mean, you know,
and going and going.
Yeah, it keeps going. They believed, they knew they didn't have a big time guy there, and they knew they didn't have, you know, they knew they were not going to be great. But they believed they would be pedestrian. You know, they believed they would be able to get some plays and be as good as they were last year. And that's why they didn't go out and sign guys in free agency, because they thought, okay, what we have is as good as you're going to get, right, and it's just got to function. And frankly, after eight games, when you've dropped 17 to 20 passes and run many more bad routes as a group, and I'm saying not any individual, they haven't functioned.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. And, you know, we can put the Terrell Owens argument to rest. I mean, he was not available until just a week or so ago.
Right.
A week ago. And he's still available now after that drama on NFL Network. And no
and
one
it's the TJ
it.
Argument. You know, what are you building toward? And you've still got to, you know, build your roster with the idea of moving forward. This is not a team that is in a pennant race needing one more piece. This is a team that, you know, still has to build a roster with an eye toward the future. And you say, you know, what would bringing in T.O. hurt? Well, if you use that logic, then you're signing a guy every day. What would he hurt? What did he hurt? What, you know, and you just can't build a roster that way. I know fans want that. They desperately want to see the Jaguars trying to do something.
Right.
But that's not how you do it.
Well, that's really, when you look at this team, and of course you want that premier pass rusher, but those are almost as hard to find these days as the quarterback.
Sure.
But when you look at this team, where could you make a dramatic impact with one player? The wide receiver.
Yeah. If you had, again, I've answered a few arguments or answered a few questions. Why didn't they draft A.J. Green? Why didn't they draft Julio Jones?
Well, yeah, you didn't have a pick in the top six.
You didn't have a pick in that top six. And at some point this offseason, you know, at some point they had to make a decision. Are we going to try to go get our quarterback? Now, say what you want. You know, there's a lot of criticism of Blaine right now. Whatever your thought is on him. But whatever your thought is on him, at that point, they believed we've got to go get our quarterback. Well, they went and got that. Okay, so if you don't go get that guy, then maybe you draft a receiver. But at some point, you've got to make a choice to go get that franchise quarterback. And that was the way they did it. So it's hard to argue that they should have taken a big-time receiver in this year's draft. And I know that hurts fans, and they don't want to hear that, but that's, you know, I don't know where they would have gotten that in this year's draft. They went after Cecil Shorts in the fourth round. Obviously, that has not worked out for the short term, but, you know, that was their effort. There weren't really third-round receivers that made sense, as much as people want to make that argument, but, you know, that's where they're at right now.
You know, I can remember when Gene took over, the spring after Gene took over. I was working at CBS, and I sat with Terry McDonough, who's his number two, and I said, how long? I mean, don't BS me, don't sugarcoat it. How long will it take you? How many drafts do you need to put a long-term winner on the field? He said four.
Right.
Well, the fourth will come next April.
Right.
And they still need what? Receivers. Now, next year there are good receivers available. It looks like a receiver-rich draft. Plus, there's some guys out there in free agency, unless they sign new deals.
Right.
But there are opportunities for them to do, with the receiving core and with the offense, what they did for the defense this year. And what's not to like about that?
Well, and that's the thing. You know, we have 2 hours, so we can talk defense.
You bet.
But, you know, if you're going to criticize individually positions that have been picked, then, you know, you also have to praise some parts of the rebuilding or of the building process. And really, this is a case where there are a couple of positions that are holding you back. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, they're one or two players away, because I don't think you're ever one or two players away.
And
in the
NFL. Learned that in 2008.
Right. But there are a couple of positions where they clearly need help. And I don't think you could say that last year. I think there were more than a couple of positions where they clearly needed help last year. So you continue to whittle down the glaring areas. And as much as 2-6 hurts, I still believe they've done that.
All right, folks, we need to take a break. As we go, we'll remind you, you can text BBQ to 72239 and enter for a chance to win the Sonny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You could hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. Back after this on Jaguars Radio. Stan. I'd welcome back. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna from Everbank Field. Brian Sexton along with John Osher. It's the Ozone tonight. We should just rename the show. It's the Ozone.
Let's not.
Joe Fortunato with his hands on the button, taking your calls.
Let's not bring down this show.
No, bringing it up. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. At John Osher, at Jags Voice. If you want to send a tweet, if you're not able to pick up the phone and call. We started talking about the wide receivers. Obviously, this conversation will go in many different directions. Let's start with James in West Liberty, Kentucky. James, you're up first. Good evening.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I actually have two questions. I'll try to make them quick as possible. I know, John, you had mentioned it earlier in the Ozone today. My question was really, do you guys think the Jags have a legit shot at the playoffs? My answer is no, only because I think the Texans, unless they have a historic downfall like they usually have, I think they'll probably win 10 or 11 games. The Jags, if they won 10 games the season, they have to win out. I don't think that's possible with the talent they have. Unless we have another Cinderella season, but I don't think they will. And the second question is, do you think Jack O'Reilly will be back at the beginning of next year? I don't know if he'll get a pass because of Blaine Gabbert, but I've also heard you guys say he might not get a pass because he didn't start him. They originally wanted him to sit. They went with McCown. That didn't work, so they went to Blaine. Do you think J.D. will be back? I know they're two separate questions, but
let me address the second part of it first. We don't know.
Right.
I mean, the only guy that knows is Wayne Weaver. We can sit here and speculate. The fans speculate based on Weaver's comments in January. I know this. Jack sat in here last night when we were doing his show, and we were at a break, but he openly admitted to Joe and I, he understands. He knows.
For sure.
He knows exactly what he's facing over the final eight games.
And that's the thing fans have to remember. You know, you're not going to talk about it publicly a whole lot. It does Jack no good to sit there and talk about it in the press conference. And the media is not going to ask him every week about it.
No.
But he's not dim. He knows, you know, the situation. They're 2-6. He's in his ninth year. You'll always hear these guys say it's a performance-based business. Right now, you're 2-6. So, I mean, clearly, you know, once the season's over with, Wayne's got some thinking to do.
Right.
And I think until then, I don't know how you really answer the question. You know, and from this point on in the season, there's going to be tons of speculation. But, you know, you can speculate one way, you can speculate the other, but there's no way to answer it until the guy in the big office down the hall, you know, figures out what he wants to do. And since he paid for the team, he gets to figure out what he wants to do.
And I forget, what was the first part of the question he was asking? Whether we thought
the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous to use a Jim Mora. Right?
Sure. And you know,
even have the conversation right
now. Do we want them to win out and make the playoffs? Obviously. But this is a team that right now has a season-high one-game winning streak.
Right.
So if they win 2 or 3 and get to 3-6, or what would it be, 5-6, well, then you can start talking scenarios. You can start talking things like that.
What we did,
and you wouldn't be absurd. Sure.
Yeah.
But until they get back in it, until they run off a couple, and with their schedule, it's not absurd, but clearly things have to go better.
Yeah, but look at the schedule of the Texans, if you will, just as a means to compare, all right? It's quite favorable for them. They get Cleveland at home, they go to Tampa, then they get their bye week, then they're here, but then they get Atlanta at home, then they're at Cincinnati, then they got Carolina at home, then they're at Indy, and they got Tennessee at home. And that's a schedule that works for a team that's supposed to be a playoff contender.
Sure. And I don't think the Texans are a great team.
No.
But I think they're a pretty good team. And I think they've got enough weapons to, 5-3.
Oh, yeah. And they don't even have
they have enough weapons to to win five to go 5-3 again.
Well, first of all, they're a dominant running team.
Right.
They didn't even have Andre Johnson, who's one of the best players in the game.
Right.
Not just best receivers, best players in the game. They've got an offense that this team could only hope for right now with the weapons that they've got. And they've got a pretty good defense over on the other side of the ball, too.
They have a good defense, and they have an outstanding defensive coordinator.
You bet.
And say what you want about Wade Phillips. And as soon as you mention Wade Phillips, you get 15 emails making fun of the guy.
Yeah.
Anybody you talk to in the NFL will tell you, in terms of calling defenses and getting the most out of defensive players, you know, he's an elite coordinator.
Well, and I talked to some of their people this week that I know, and the first thing that came up about Wade was is that this year, the Texans defenders know exactly what they're supposed to do. They know
and
their assignment.
And he makes it simple.
And why they're supposed to do it and what the guy next to him's doing. And, I mean, that's what every coach talks about.
A story about Wade Phillips.
But not everyone can do it.
That speaks to that and speaks to really good coaching is the story when he was in Buffalo. A friend of mine worked with the Bills, and Wade was walking out one afternoon at, like 2 or 3 on a Friday afternoon. And this guy was a young guy at the time. And he goes, Wade, don't you have game plan to do? Don't you have stuff you can get ready for? And Wade goes, if I ain't seen it by now, we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Meaning there's only a few things to do. And this is a guy who knows how to put guys in the right spot. He knows it's not overly complicated. You make it simple for the players and you let them go play, which if you think about it is a lot of what Mel Tucker has done this year.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. At Jags Voice, at John Osher. Let's grab Bill on the west side of Jacksonville. Hello, Bill. Welcome to the show.
How are you doing today?
Good.
My question, probably echo a lot of fans, very, very frustrated with Del Rio. Been that way for a while, ever since the left, which what I would call a debacle. How long do you think it's possible he might even be cut before or replaced before the season's over with, or do you think Weaver's just going to go ahead and just finish the season with him?
You know, my answer is no.
Right, my answer is no, too. And, again, as we said just a minute ago, we don't know and we won't know one way or the other until Wayne says one way or the other.
Right.
But it would stand to reason that if you were ever going to do something on those lines during midseason, logic says you would do it at the bye.
Right.
And again, I don't know if that was even considered, but you wouldn't think that at this point, you know, what's the point of a change?
Yeah.
Is the point, you know,
it's not going to dramatically improve the outcome. It never happens that way.
Interim
coaches don't go on winning streaks. So, and I know this, that one of the things, and you can tell, that Wayne Weaver values is continuity.
Sure.
And to shake things up with 2 months remaining in the season doesn't create continuity and give his football team a chance to be successful. You look at the last 3 weeks, the second half of the ball game in Pittsburgh in particular, the Ravens game, and then a good deal of the Texans game. They were competitive.
Right.
They played hard. They just built. They have holes. They can't, the receivers don't separate. You've got a rookie quarterback who he's got to have some help. His Pro Bowl tight end is not catching the ball right now. You know, and it's not as if
They were quitting.
Yeah, that'd
if
be
you
one
were
thing.
Seeing if we weren't talking about this, if we weren't sitting here saying, "Boy, they've played hard and they've been close."
Right.
And, you know, the bottom line is they're two, you know, kind of tricky endings away from being 4-4, and we're sitting here going, hey, this team's got a shot.
Right.
And now, again, that means nothing in the NFL. But if you're trying to figure out, you get rid of a coach midseason if things are a shambles and things are just, you know, you're getting beat by 35, and you can just tell the players ain't playing for this guy anymore.
Right.
Right now, you look at the field and you look what's going on, and that's not the impression you get.
If you got the end of the Carolina game with the clock and the missed snap out here week in, week out, you got that against the Steelers, you got it, you know, you got the last 3 weeks. All right, well, now then you can call and make an argument for it. But at this point in time, it just doesn't seem to make any sense with 8 weeks to go. And as to whether he'll be back or, you know.
Don't know.
Everyone can sit and offer an opinion, but at the end of the day, it is up to Wayne as to what is going to happen. And we can answer that. We'll answer it the same way every week through the end of the season until a point a decision is made.
And we won't sit here and tell you it's not an issue.
It absolutely
but,
is.
But we'll just tell you, you know, there's just not much. They all there's not that it. Much to say on
hey,
it.
Hey, look, you know, how about the fact that Kasim Osgood in the post game last week, you know, said as much. You can't be blaming the coaches when players are dropping passes and not making tackles or missing interceptions. That was unsolicited. He came up with that.
Right.
So the players know. Everybody knows that cloud is hanging there. If you don't, go to Pro Football Talk on a more regular basis, mm-hmm. and you'll see the hot seat. Turn on the NFL Network, and they talk about coaches on the hot seat. You hear Tony Sperano, you hear Jack Del Rio. It's not a secret. No one is hiding from it. It's just a matter of no one can give you an answer. And if you were to get Wayne Weaver on his cell phone tonight, he would not tell you what he's thinking.
No.
He wouldn't do it. So we're all just blowing hot air here as we go through the motions. We've come to the end of the first half hour of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. We're going to call it the Ozone tonight, just for fun. And you're listening on Jaguars Radio. All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week, the Ozone, if you will, presented by Aetna here on Jaguars Radio. You can become a part of Jaguars Advantage, which is the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. Season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. And we go to San Diego for our next call. Anthony is standing by. Good evening, Anthony. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for your time. I wanted to let you guys know I love everything that you guys do, from the website, the radio shows, to everything about the organization.
We have any prizes to
my question/comment was about Gene Smith.
Okay.
There's a story in the Times Union about Gene Smith declining a contract extension. I just hope that he does come back. I think he's done an excellent job. I think all of the conversation about small school guys is way out of line. I mean, Jerry Rice was a small school guy, and he was probably the greatest player to ever play the game. Dwight Lowry, a guy that we picked up from the Jets, is another small school guy. I mean, he's helped solidify our secondary. I want to thank you guys for all your time, and go Jaguars.
I hadn't seen the story, but since you mentioned it, I called it up. And that's interesting. I don't know much about
why he turned it down.
Yeah, obviously, you weren't here. There are a lot of people in this building that would like to see Gene get his extension done.
Absolutely.
Because it provides for continuity for the franchise. You know, I mentioned to our listeners that in the spring of 2009, after Gene had been named general manager, I did an interview. I was at CBS and Fox, and I actually had Terry McDonough out on my porch at the beach. We were doing a little segment, and we sat, and before the cameras went on, I said, "What do you think? How long does it take to turn this thing around?" And he said, "Give us four drafts, and we'll have a long-term winner." Well,
right.
the fourth draft is next year. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I'd like to see Gene. I'm biased. I mean, I've known Gene since the trailer days. Been around. I've seen what he's done. I know what kind of a scout he is. I know the talent that he's developed. This is a talented football team that still needs some pieces to be able to compete week in and week out.
Well, and as much as people want to quick trigger judge drafts, and that's fine. You know, and you can put the X number of players he's drafted on the board and say, you know, you should have drafted this guy before this. You should have drafted this guy before this. You can do that all day if you want.
Sure. I can go back to 95 and point out how many guys they
passed up. You can do it with every team, and you can make any GM look bad. Or you can make any GM look good. But the bottom line is there's more to it than pure grading each guy you draft. There's the ability to know how to build the team long-term, what's needed. There's an ability to be patient in the face of a storm, which I think Gene is. And all those are things that you have to be a good long-term GM, because there's no such thing as a good short-term one. If you're just trying to build for a week, a month, one season, you're going to have disaster. I believe Gene has good long-term vision, and that's the most important thing for a GM to have.
Well, you know, and guys take some time to come along.
Sure.
Look at what we've seen the last couple of games out of Derek Cox.
Right.
He's been sensational.
People were ready to give up on Clint Session 3 weeks ago.
Absolutely.
They were also willing to, they were also very ready to give up on Will Rackley, who has played very well the last 2 weeks.
I didn't call Haloti Ngata's name once or twice.
And he played very well this last week. And everybody's going to call
him,
oh, you're crazy.
No.
Will Rackley as well as Eugene Monroe are long-term solutions on their side of the ball, and that's what that's what you're trying to draft. That's what you're trying to build.
He has courage of his conviction. Tyson Alualu,
which is a huge thing for a GM.
Oh, you bet. Tyson Alualu was clearly high on their board, a top player. If you saw the game on Sunday against the Texans, you saw a guy. He's still playing on one leg.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a knee issue. Lots of players. Clint Session told us that he did not have surgery on his elbow that he injured last year, missed 11 games, because of the uncertainty in the lockout, because
right.
he didn't know if he could get it rehabilitated with a professional staff
right.
that was with a team. I don't know whether Tyson held off and didn't get the knee taken care of, but it's a safe assumption, you know, that we're talking about a guy who probably could have had a little bit of surgery and
right.
maybe fixed it.
Tyson's a more private guy. He's not going to talk about that the way Clint is.
No,
but
he's not.
It's a safe assumption.
Were made. Exactly. Decisions were made about things like that. So you've got Alualu and Knighton, who they're really the key of this defense.
Sure.
Look at the way Paul Posluszny is playing. Look at what Gene did getting Dwight Lowry for a seventh-round pick. Are you kidding?
Right.
I mean,
well, and the bottom line
ridiculous.
Is, you know, Gene is a draft long-term, free agent, short-term guy. But I'm not a big believer that you build through free agency. But you have to give this team credit for going out, doing free agency the right way, and they have filled in 5-6 holes on defense with not a bust in the bunch. That is not easy to do in free agency.
No.
Because the thing people want to do in free agency is they want to go out and sign the name. Everybody was talking about the guy who signed with Philadelphia, and I don't bother trying to pronounce his name. But everybody wanted that cornerback. That was what you had to have. Why don't we sign this guy? Well, the bottom line is he hasn't played well in Philadelphia. He was the headline-grabbing guy that gave them the moniker of that dream team.
Sure.
But Gene went out and signed a guy in Posluszny, who a lot of people criticized the signing at first. And a lot of people did not think much of the free agent signings when it first happened. You know, DeJuan Land, there were criticisms. Well, if you put this all together, you can't argue the Jaguars' defense has not played well. And you can't argue that the free agent signings aren't a big reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the other thing I like about Gene Smith, and this is the quote. Gene Frenette wrote the story. It was just posted recently on the Florida Times Union website. And I'm quoting Gene Smith here. A contract was extended to me, and I declined it, Smith said. I did not think I deserved an extension based on the conditions. Our scouts and other employees weren't being extended, and I didn't think I deserved it. However, I do appreciate that Wayne offered me one. Maybe Wayne, another paragraph, maybe Wayne was surprised I declined, but I think he respected it, Smith said. I'm about team. Man, that is doing the right thing. That is character. That's why I think he's the right guy for the very long-term future to take this franchise forward, because he applies those traits, those personality traits, and those character traits to building a team.
Well, and it's hard to explain to people who've never met Gene or haven't been around him what we're talking about.
Right.
But I've known a lot of people in the NFL who would say that. I'm not sure I know that many people who would have done that.
How many? Yeah, right. You mean they would pass on the extension?
Well, who would say I'm all about team?
Right.
And but I'm
really
not sure there's that many people who would pass on the extension.
Yeah,
And that's, you know, I don't know how else to explain the difference.
Now, they've got a contract that's expiring, and I would imagine at some point here in the near future, they will sit down and have another conversation about it.
I hope so.
I do, too. A lot of people in this building think very highly of Gene. And here's the thing you should know. There are a lot of people around the National Football League, Bill Polian, a guy you know well, who think very highly of him as well. By the way,
I've told you,
the Falcons
and
the Texans and the Browns all at one point called and inquired about him.
When Gene Smith got the job, the Colts started really worrying about the Jaguars long term.
Yeah.
And of course, things have played out where you make all the Colts jokes you want. But the people in that organization, when Gene Smith took over, a lot of people told me that's significant. Their roster will get better.
Believe firmly in Gene Smith. We'll take a break and come back with more. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on Jaguars Radio.
News.
All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. About 10 more minutes in hour number one. 855-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Lewis is in Mandarin, up first in this final segment. Lewis, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going on?
Good.
All right, I got a comment and a question. My comment about the whole small school, big school drafting thing, I think what gets us fans upset is not that the small school thing, because you find football players where you find football players. But if you look at the Hall of Famers, you know, most of them come from big schools. You know, you find your Terrell Owens, you find your, you know,
Joe
Jerry
Green.
Rice. And our team is consisted of 80% small school.
No, it's not.
First of all, it's not 80%. It's not 80%. You would be stunned at the number of Hall of Famers that come from nowhere state. There are a lot of them.
And my question
You're making
would be,
gross generalizations, though, Lewis. Just understand that you're not dealing in hard facts. You're just feeling that because you have to feel like it's 80% small school. But go count. It's not.
Yeah, the draft is – I'm sorry. I meant the drafting of Gene Smith.
Well, no, but look.
Most
look at the guys that he's
been
– No, no, not most of it at all.
Guys.
Well, no, wait. Hold on. His first draft pick in the first round was who? Eugene Monroe, UVA. Second round pick in his first draft was Eben Britton, Arizona. Right? You want to come over and talk about other guys. Tyson Alualu played at Cal. I mean, there's lots of guys on this roster that he's drafted that have played at Division I schools. There's a couple of guys, but have you watched Derek Cox lately? I mean, he played at William & Mary, and he's playing at a very high level. A very high level.
He's played okay. He's played pretty good the past couple of weeks. The thing is, he needs to be consistent and stay
injured.
Healthy.
But that doesn't have anything to do. That doesn't have anything to do with whether he played at a big school or a small school. You know, and let's just talk about a couple of other guys who are out there that played. How about Chris Johnson? Has he been good enough the last couple of years? He played at East Carolina, for goodness sakes. I mean, we're not talking about a football factory. There's just the small school thing is way overblown. Every time one guy busts from a small school, everybody says, whoa, hold on.
Right.
Fred Jackson played at Cole College.
Derek Harvey played at Florida.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
we just go on and on and on, back and forth. They can play or they can't play. And if the argument is, well, they should draft more Gators, Noles, and Hurricanes, man, that doesn't work either. You know, there's a lot of people down here who thought that the Jaguars should spend most of their draft picks on drafting Southeastern Conference players. There's a lot of great players that come from the Southeastern Conference.
No question.
There's a lot of guys who have gone bust also.
But you can't – the bottom line is the best GMs, once the first round is over, you take school size out of consideration.
Yeah.
And I do believe that in the first round, if you're expecting a guy to come in and start immediately, it is a big help if they're from a large school and they play that kind of competition because they're more ready for it. But most rookies, the vast majority, it takes them a while to make a significant impact.
Well, I'm going to tell you this now, too.
It just does.
People are looking at Cecil Shorts and wondering, hey, man, you're talking about a guy from Division III who had no offseason, who right now looks lost. But I'm with you, John. I watched him during training camp, and I watched him in a couple of the preseason games. Give the kid time.
There are a lot of rookies. The Jaguars are still in a situation where they're playing rookies probably a little too quickly. But that's where their roster is right now. And Will Rackley probably should not have been playing the first month. That being said, he's played very, very well the last couple of weeks.
And he played Haloti Ngata.
Right. And, you know, so was 5 weeks after he signed his contract maybe a little too soon for him to be starting? Perhaps. But is he a player that they believe is going to be a long-term, you know, a solution to his spot? Absolutely. And, you know, they found him at Lehigh. And you can criticize him all you want, but he's starting to play very well.
Brad Meester played at Northern Iowa, for goodness sakes.
Right.
I mean, we just go on and on and on with this.
Rasheen played at BCC. I mean, you know, it's the whole.
And how about Cameron Bradfield, right, against the Steelers? He was told at the stadium, you are going to start today. He didn't know. And he goes out, and he plays well.
It's a non-issue, but it's an argument. When you're 2-6, you're never going to win the argument.
No, you're not.
So it is what it is.
All right, we appreciate the phone call. We move right along, 355-NFL-1. Let's grab Luke, who's joining us from Eastport, Maine. Hello, Luke. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Well, long-time listener. I got to say, I love everything you guys do with the website and the radio shows. Definitely going to say, though, I almost dropped the dish I had in my hand when I heard that Gene – turn down a contract extension.
Yeah, but when you read for the reasons why he did it, you can appreciate.
Yeah,
I feel
a lot more relieved reading it. But I mean, that really speaks to the kind of guy he is and the kind of character that he brings to the team. And it's with that I'd like to segue into a question I have for you guys. I'll take your answer off the air, but keeping track of the big time receivers in college right now that I'm really hoping are on the wish list for Gene, if he's with us, God willing, in April. I think Justin Blackmon is definitely a guy that I think would be a really powerful addition and brings that kind of number one ability.
Top prospect.
And I was wondering if you guys had anybody similar in mind that you think the Jaguars will be looking at coming out of the draft, any big receivers we can get. Go Jags, and I'll take your answer off the air, guys.
You know, there's a couple of guys out there. And right now, and I mean, we're in November. The college season's not finished. They haven't even begun the process. But right now, Blackman's the number one guy on most people's board.
Yeah, he's the guy you hear about.
Yeah.
And it's safe to say anybody who is in that top group, in that top 10 or 15, in the top two or three receivers, obviously the Jaguars are going to be looking at them if they have a top 10 pick. I mean, I know they're about best available player, but you just have a feeling that the best available player is going to be a receiver.
Well, and that doesn't preclude them from moving
right
up or down depending on where the guy might fall to get value for what they're looking for. You know, there's the kid at South Carolina that a lot of people point out, Alshon mm-hmm. Jeffery, and he's a good player. I don't think he's quite as powerful or strong as Blackmon is, but he's a very good player. The Floyd kid at Notre Dame
right.
is a guy whose name is being, you know, bandied about. I don't watch as much college football as some, so I can't go 15 deep until you
I watch some, and I watch, you know, people talk about Tune at Wisconsin. I saw him the other night. He doesn't look incredibly fast, but I could be wrong on that.
What about the kid at Oklahoma?
Looks good. I mean, just from watching on TV, and the first thing any scout will tell you is you really can't tell just watching on TV about these guys.
No.
But, you know, the guy who catches your eye is Blackmon because he looks like that big kid who is just bigger than the rest.
Yeah.
And just
John Baldwin's touchdown catch the other night for Kansas City?
Yes.
I mean, it was indefensible.
Right, right. And that's the sort of play that you see him making at the college level. You know, the only risk is he a kid who just dominates the college level and doesn't do what it takes in the NFL?
Right.
And you never know until you start scouting.
Yeah.
So, Blackmon looks very good. He looks like a guy that makes sense. But if you know anything about the draft process, you really don't know until April.
Absolutely. And let's just say this. Trust me, Gene Smith and Terry McDonough, his number two, understand who the best players are. And they also understand where they are deficient better than you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So they will turn over every rock and every stone on the top kids all the way down to the kids, you know, at Mount Union. They will find good football players. They will go and grab them. And when you look at what they've done so far, you have to believe, especially with the way that this defense is playing, that they'll put the same effort into doing that on the offensive side of the ball in 2011. All right, hour number one is in the books. And season ticket holders, as we go to the break, we'll remind you, you can get paid at the pump when you buy 10 gallons or more of Gate gasoline. Show your Jaguars reward card and receipt to the cashier for your coupon worth $2 in Jag Bucks, redeemable for game day concessions and merchandise. More calls, more questions, more comments, more Jaguars this week. The Ozone, presented by Aetna on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman. And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, a trimmed down show this evening. Brian Sexton and John Osher here. Consider this your personal ozone. You get your questions answered tonight by John Osher instead of tomorrow or the next day or the day after that.
Is the trimming because Baselli's gone?
Yeah.
Is that what we're saying?
I saw Baselli walked in here last week and he said, God, I am so fat. And then he and I had coffee with a buddy of mine out at the beach, and he walked into Shelby's Coffee House in Neptune Beach. I'm sorry, Lily's Coffee House in Neptune Beach, and said, God, I'm so fat. You know? So, yes. Tony knows that as he ordered a donut, I think. So, yeah, it trims it down. And a log is trim. No, but it's trim in terms of the number of egos, the number of big mouths.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's only one big mouth in here this evening, and then there's you. 355-NFL-1. Hey, Bueller Swiss Watch Company is the official watch of the Jaguars, Jaguars fans. You can get your Bueller Swiss Watch at Jacobs Jewelers in Jacksonville, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Lorraine's Diamond Tree in Middleburg, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. So John is here, and you can join us, 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Phone lines are lit up on the Wednesday night of the bye week, and we are welcoming you to bring your calls. And let's start with Donnie, who joins us from McClenny. Hello, Donnie. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I'm going to shake you guys up a little bit. I have a little bit of a good idea, I think. I was reading in the news today about Mark Brunell having some financial issues and so forth, and I'm thinking maybe it would benefit the team if we could bring him back, at least for a season. I'm not sure how old he is, not sure what kind of shape he's in, but what I'm thinking is bring him back, let him throw a few balls, let him hand off a few balls. Under his tutelage, Blaine Gabbert can get much better. He will have a chance to regain his financial status, and it'll definitely be a boon for the team when it comes to ticket sales in the city.
What? Oh, well.
Go ahead, John.
I mean, I'm not sure how many people, you know, would come out to see Mark Brunell on the sidelines. And you're not going to play him a whole lot, and I just don't think there's very much to be gained from it.
He's 41.
I wouldn't be against it. I like Mark. I mean, it'd be great to have him around. You know, I like talking to him, but I'm not sure how much you really gain as an organization from making such a move. Maybe Brian feels differently.
Well, no, I don't. I mean, I like Mark a lot, too. I really I'm looking at the photo of him on the New York Jets website. He's 41, and his birthday is in September. I remember that because his birthday was the Jets game in September of 1995.
Okay.
And that was a horrendous game.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm looking at him with the gray hair right now, and I don't know what Mark's penchant is for coaching. It's too bad Baselli's not here to answer it. I know this. The people in New York like him. They like having him around. But then again, they've got a quarterback that's a little squirrely in Sanchez, and maybe he needs that. I don't think Blaine needs that. Blaine needs to be coached well.
Mm-hmm.
Blaine needs time on the field. Blaine needs receivers who get open and run good routes. Donnie, I understand what you're saying.
Mark wouldn't hurt
to
be around him, but
I'm not sure if that's
I don't
the
know
right
if
move.
It's not going to put people in the seats, and it's not going to generate that sort of excitement. You know, because you're not going to go back to 1998.
Will put people in the seats if you do a Mark Brunell day some point in the future.
Sure.
And bring him out and have him be the captain, and everyone will give him a round of applause.
And the best way to put people in the seats, win.
Win, exactly.
I mean, you know, that's the thing. You know, that's what you have to keep your eye on. You can do all sorts of gimmicks. You can do all sorts of things. But what you want to do is you want to continue building, start winning, and then people in the seats had better take care of itself.
All right, now let's point out the obvious, and that is that Luke McCown is a really good mentor in terms of how to prepare and how to be a pro and how to read defenses. You know, McCown may not be the best starting quarterback in the NFL, but he's a really good guy to have in the meeting room with your young quarterback.
Absolutely. He's fine. I mean, he is a good guy to have in that role, no question about it.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. James is in Indianapolis, which, by the way, is where we will be a week from Sunday when play resumes. James, how are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I just want to say that, Brian, I think you're an awesome play caller. I'm really glad that the Jags have stuck with you all this time. I think you bring a unique voice. I listen to you guys every day out here in Indianapolis.
Thank you.
And, John, the Ozone, keep it up. We really enjoy it. I know you guys. I know you get a lot of criticism, but you're more of a person to take care of people's mental issues. It seems like, because they're always upset.
I appreciate it.
But with that being said, my thoughts just on Rasheen Matthews. Do you think we're going to be bringing him back next year? I know it's going to really count on the salary, what he's looking for. I know Gene Smith. We're all going to presume that he's going to be back next year. We know he's trying to get younger, but he's also a good player. He's played really well for us this season. Do you think that's a move that we're going to bring him back if the salary's right?
I think it's one of those that you look at after the season, and you know, you talk to Rasheen, and you know, if they're both on the same page about where Rasheen is in his career, And if Rasheen sort of understands that it's probably a year or two deal rather than a four-year deal, then it wouldn't be absurd to think you bring him back. If he's looking for, you know, big-time veteran, well, what they call contract money, then I'm not sure it's a move you want to make, because I'm not, you know, realistically, he's probably not going to be your starter for four more years. So, but I think Rasheen, from what I know of him, he's a smart enough guy and a savvy enough guy about the league that if that was his option, he would certainly take it and certainly understand it.
I would think so, too. And yeah. I think the way that he's playing right now,
playing well.
It's a contract year, and you know, you always hope to get a guy's best effort. So they're going to look very hard at that. And my guess is they'll bring him back at a number that makes sense for both parties.
Right. And the only X factor there is if some other team decides that they need that at a certain price,
right,
then there, I think with Rasheen right now in his career, there is certainly a number that wouldn't make sense for the Jaguars. I mean, it's not a case where with some players, no matter what it takes, he's a core guy, you're going to bring him back. You know, somebody like Tyson, for example. When he comes up, if his knee's okay,
right,
then you look at it and say, okay, this guy's a core, whatever it's going to take, no questions asked, bring him back.
You know, here's...
Rasheen's a little beyond that point in his career. Let's
look at the other side of it for just a second. What if Derek Cox comes back and plays the way he has the last couple of games over the remaining eight games of the season? He's finishing up his third year. He was a third-round pick, signed a four-year deal. You got to start thinking about getting him done to a deal. Jaguars certainly have plenty of cap room. And the reason I say that is it's always cheaper to get the deal done well ahead of time.
It is, but I'm not sure there's always a hurry to get it done a year ahead of time. And with a guy like Derek, I'm not sure, you know, he has done it. I don't know that he's been consistent
in doing it. Well,
that's
why I say you need to see more from him in the second half of the season.
Yeah,
but they did it early with Rasheen a couple of years ago.
Right.
Rasheen got his big hit early.
And that's one way of doing it. And some teams do that too quickly. And there is a such thing as jumping the gun on a guy.
Yeah, no doubt.
And you're not, you know, there's not always the hurry to lock a guy up. I mean, and I covered the Colts for 10 years. A lot of their guys, they re-signed right before their free agency period started. And did it cost them a little more? Perhaps. But they didn't have many mistakes in that re-signing process either. So there's a couple of schools of thought on how to go about it.
Well, James, Rasheen has eight games to give them every reason to pay him. And he's played very well. But, you know, there's also, remember the very first play of the season where Matt Roth got the sack on Matt Hasselbeck. Kenny Britt double-moved Rasheen and was wide open. And here's what I know. I know that the coaches said to him, watch the double move, because the reputation on Rasheen is that he's aggressive.
Right.
And he'll bite on a double move. And, boy, if Matt Roth doesn't make the sack, the Titans may have had a 7-0 lead on the first play of the game.
And so we'd be talking about 1-7 and not 2-6.
So you have to look at it from a complete perspective. But, boy, Rasheen and Derek the last 2 weeks have been sensational with their energy level, the way Rasheen in particular against the run in Houston. I mean, man, that's exactly what you want. And if you pay him, you want him to bring that game in and game out next year.
He's been very criticized over the years, and again, I didn't see him play by play last year or the year before, but corners are often overly criticized because they're just out there and you see them, and you know, sometimes they're not making mistakes that people think are mistakes. Everything you've heard is that Rasheen's playing very, very well, and if he continues to play well, then obviously there's a decision to make at the end of the year.
He's also a great guy in your locker room.
Sure.
By the way, there are some people in this building that really believe that the process that he was a part of with the Players Association in negotiating, you know, he went to Washington and New York for all of those meetings. I've had people tell me that they saw him grow through that process.
Yeah.
And it changed him in the way that he approached. Always been a good guy in the locker room. Maybe this year has been his best year down there as a leader.
He certainly seemed, I mean, again, I've only had a one-on-one contact with him this year, but he's certainly one of the guys who you look at and see, okay, this guy's a pro. And, you know,
he has been since the day he
arrived. That's my impression of him.
All right. Folks, we need to take a break as we go. We'll remind you that Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. 800-355-NFL1, at Jags Voice, at John Osher. We roll along with Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on Jaguars Radio. Well, if you're the parent or guardian of a daughter 6 to 17, stop by your local Bell store and register your child to become a member of the Junior Roar. She'll perform at halftime when the Jaguars host the Bucks on December 11th. Registration is now through Sunday, November 6th. For official rules, visit a Bell store near you. Phone lines have been stacked all night long. They've just kind of lightened up here. So if you'd like to join John Osher for a little Ozone Live, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. I promise we'll get to the tweets. The phone lines have just been so stacked, I've hated to get away from it. John's in Green Cove Springs, and he is next. Hello, John. Welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
The thing I've got a problem with is the talk about Gene and everything is, where's the guy that was here before him?
Detroit.
I haven't heard anything about him, right?
No, he resigned. He was let go, however you want to put it, at the end of 2008.
Right, but the one thing is, if Gene goes this year, I'll guarantee you he'll have a job next year.
Oh, yeah.
You'll hear his name, and we'll be losing somebody really that we shouldn't lose.
Listen, there's no doubt. Everyone agrees. I shouldn't say everyone agrees because I don't believe everyone agrees. But most people around here who know would agree. And I honestly don't believe that Wayne Weaver misses what he's got in Gene Smith. I mean, you just can't look at what he's done. Not just that now. They replaced a lot of high-dollar players. If you go back to 2009, Brian Williams, Tony Pachos, you know, they moved a lot of guys off the roster that were costing this franchise big salaries when they started their rebuilding. So they have been financially strong as well as providing the core of this roster headed into the future.
There are very few spots on this roster that, you know, what you look for in a bad roster is when you've got spots where, you know, you've got a left tackle and there's some left tackle on the street who you still owe money to, you know, just
dead money.
Mess like that, you know, and they've
had that here before.
Yeah, there are franchises in the league right now who just have a mess, and you get messes by signing bad veteran free agents. Is usually how you get messes, and by just absolutely missing on guys in the draft, right, and re-signing those guys. The Jaguars roster is not a mess. It is not something that they're going to have to tear down and rebuild from. It's a work in progress. It still needs things added onto it, but it's not a shambles. You know, what's next is not a rebuilding. It's just a continuation of the process. And that speaks highly of Gene's ability over the course of 2 or 3 years of heading this thing, of keeping it in control and keeping it from not being a mess. And that's a lot harder to do than it sounds.
You know, when you look at this roster big picture, right, in 2003, they took Byron Leftwich. In 2004, they took Reggie Williams. In 2005,
Matt Jones,
they took,
right,
Matt Jones. I think we all would agree that Mercedes Lewis was strong in 06. But in 2007, they took Reggie Nelson. In 2008, they took
Harvey.
Derek Harvey.
Yeah.
Well, just go back. 03, the other guy that was under consideration for the top pick, right? And there were plenty of people in this building that questioned Byron Leftwich.
Sure.
Small hands, small feet, you know, the windup. They could have had Terrell Suggs, 6-time Pro Bowler, 75 career sacks. Next year, if they don't take Byron Leftwich, right, Ben Roethlisberger just,
right,
is in their laps, right? Then the next year, instead of taking Matt Jones, because they wouldn't have shown that risk-taking, they probably would have taken Heath Miller, who is a guy that Gene Smith coveted. All right, well, I mean, you're talking about Pro Bowlers and guys,
right,
who are the heart of their team right now, and the Jaguars don't have that. They should have guys in their prime from those drafts besides 07 and 08.
It's obviously hard. It's obviously hard to do that because
hard
you don't
overcome that.
Well, and you don't know for sure that's how it would play out.
You're right.
You can always,
although,
look.
In 03, we know that if they don't take,
right,
Leftwich,
and it stands to reason if you don't have, obviously, but you can always look back. My point on Gene is, from what I know of him and from what I know of good football people who talk about him, not every general manager knows and has the patience and has the
strength
conviction to build a roster the right way. And it's a very difficult thing to tell people when you're 2-6 it's being built the right way. Right. And, you know, for those who call in and argue, well, you're 2-6, that's not good enough, nobody's going to tell you it is. I can just tell you that
it ain't going to be that way.
If Gene Smith walks out the door, it's not going to take him very long to find another one to go into.
No. And my point in bringing up those, not that it would have absolutely played out that way, but that's the hole that they're still digging out of.
Sure.
You know, you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they've got those players from those years on the roster. Have they had misses? Yeah, everyone has misses. Bill Polian has been the executive of the year with, what, two different teams or three?
And has had a lot of misses. No question. I think we're agreeing in the sense that Gene, his picks are going to be solid, and you're not going to look back at them, especially in the first round, and go, ugh.
Yeah.
And that's what you've got to avoid. You've got to avoid a 5 or 6 year period where they're just washouts. And you know, you mentioned the Colts. That's what they're going through right now. Donald Brown, Jerry Hughes, right in a row. You know, just name two. Their first round picks have missed, and it has created a depleted roster that is now shown up now that Peyton's not there.
Right.
But if you miss on your first round picks, you know, I always used to look at the Jaguars back in the era that you're talking about and think, my goodness, it's an amazing thing that they're good because they had a great roster and missed on first-round picks.
Right.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, it sure is. And they paid for it in the salary cap because they had to supplement it with free agency.
Right, and that's where it breaks down.
Yeah, and that's
what the Jaguars
–
that's what the Jaguars right now are not – have not been hurt doing that, and that's why the way they did free agency this year was so impressive is you sign free agents and you don't have a bunch of misses sitting there. They all look like they can be core guys who can fulfill their contract where you're not paying money over yourself. That's hard to do, and it's a key development.
Now, having said that, Gabbert's the guy.
Sure.
Gabbert has got to become that headline player, that frontline player, in order for Gene Smith's tenure here to be successful now.
Without question.
No matter what, he's going to be married to that quarterback in those terms.
Without question. But I will say that, obviously, missing on a quarterback, and I do not believe in any way, shape, or form the blame is a miss.
Right.
But it's not as damaging to your franchise to miss on a young quarterback as it was before the CBA changed.
Oh, in terms of the money that you
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to dig out of it long term. But I don't want it in any way, shape, or form to be that, you know, if people interpret that as me saying that I think Blaine's a miss. Everything I've heard and everything I've seen is that while you can't prove it yet, there's every chance that he's going to be the guy.
Just look at Aaron Rodgers.
Sure.
I mean, there's so many examples of guys. And the flash that we're seeing right now from Cam Newton, from Christian Ponder, does not mean that it will be sustainable either. You've got to give it time. And, of course, when you look at what Newton's doing up there, Steve Smith helps a lot. You put Steve Smith down here, you probably have different results.
It is going to take fixing what's wrong with the receivers before you can truly judge Blaine.
Absolutely.
And that's just for, I mean, if I've gotten one email on Blaine this week, I am worn out reading about it, people criticizing him, and that's fine. That's part of the gig, and Blaine would be the first one to tell you that.
Right.
But you will not be able to accurately judge him until the receiver situation gets fixed.
Like, I'm just curious. They criticize him for the vicious hit that he took and getting up, clearing his head, getting his ribs wrapped, and coming back after three plays?
They've criticized.
Come on.
Somebody said he ought to cut his hair. I mean, whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's fans, and that's okay.
And that's what drives the game.
We get right.
Come on, folks. Have a clear head on this and take a look at that before you make that decision.
There are people who have, you know, who are writing them off, and they think they know, and it's fine. They're supposed to think they know, but I can tell the rational among us that it is just still way too early to tell.
All right, folks. You can help our military stay connected to loved ones by bringing a gently used cell phone to the November 27th game. That's Jaguars Military Appreciation Day. You'll provide a member of our overseas military with a 60-minute phone card. Jacksonville is about as good a military town as there is in the NFL, so we expect to see those bins full that afternoon. We're back with another half hour. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, after the news on WOKV. Depend on it. Well, don't forget that on Tuesday, that's November 8th, J.D. Byrider invites you to their dealership at 8864 Atlantic Boulevard, right up there where the old Sound Advice building was, across from Regency Square Mall. You can have cookies with the Jaguars rookies. They'll be there from noon till 2. signing autographs and sharing cookies with you. Plenty of time to take your calls for John Osher. We've got about 24 minutes left in the program. 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. And Lee held through the break. He's over on the west side. Lee, thanks for holding. How are you this evening?
Good evening, Brian and John. Thank you for taking my call. I know this has been the Gene Smith Love Fest tonight,
yep.
And I appreciate his character and the abilities that he's shown over the year. But let me just play devil's advocate,
sure,
and give you two reasons why a lot of Jaguar fans like myself are really down on the man and doubting his competence with this team. Number one, I do look at his number one picks of the last three drafts. I see Eugene Monroe's just another guy, not anything special.
You're wrong.
Not worthy of a
You're
number
wrong.
Eight pick.
You're wrong.
Tyson Alualu, I don't see him being worthy of a number 10 pick. I
what
think
are you
he
watching?
Could have been gotten later.
What are you watching? I mean, do you ever watch inside enough, and do you understand what they do enough, Lee, to know what he is?
I'm just telling you.
Well, what do you want? What's a guy have to do? What
better,
is
better players.
Hold on a sec. What's better play from Tyson? First of all, do you know what position Tyson plays?
Yeah, he's a defensive tackle.
No. How do they use him?
How do they use him?
Do you know what specifically he is?
All right, you tell me.
He's a three technique. Tell me what a three technique does, Lee.
I can't.
You don't. So you can't make a judgment on a young player when everybody else sees it and say, well, I just got to see more. That's not it, man. You can't be that obtuse.
Well, and let me go on then
well,
to another
based
reason.
On what we've heard from you the first two, it's not even worth going on for because you're not making a rational judgment.
Brian, why is our offense so horrible?
Because the receivers stink.
And why were we told we could go with these
scrimmage?
Guys? Why were we told
because
that we were
there was
set?
No
we
other choice. Well, first of all, they thought they would get better play from Jason Hill. They haven't. They missed Todd Monken. The truth of the fact of the matter is they've got a first-year receivers coach in there, and these receivers are running lousy routes. Right now, they are playing very poorly. They are scrambling to get it. Now, here's what you can't figure out. He was a Pro Bowler with 10 touchdowns last year. Explain to me why Mercedes Lewis is clanging the ball off his hands. Is that Gene Smith's fault? It's not Rob Boris' fault, because last year he helped him to the Pro Bowl. Why is it? You can't account for it. There is an unanswered question. Let's talk a little bit about Will Rackley. Will is the left guard. Will stoned, absolutely with hands that are just now coming back to strength. Nobody knew about. Stoned Haloti Ngata. Haloti is one of the best football players in the league, let alone interior defensive lineman. He stoned him. Cold stoned him. Uche Nwaneri is playing at a very consistent level on the right side. How about Guy Wimper? He didn't draft him, but he brought him in. Guy Wimper has to go into the lineup because Eben Britton's back is hurting him. Now they can't get Guy Wimper out. He's playing at a very high level. Eugene Monroe, are you kidding? Eugene Monroe is not playing at Tony Baselli's level, but he's playing pretty darn good, and he's been playing with a stinger that's limited the mobility in his neck and his arms. So you're
Brian,
making
you know,
all these
you
judgments.
You know how frustrating it is for fans in
but
a year that the Colts have finally surrendered the AFC South. We're not even competitive.
But you
We're
can't
not
get frustrated.
Competing for
but
it.
You, first of all, they've been competitive the last 3 weeks. They're not competing for the division title right now because they lost the ball game on Sunday. All right, but it isn't as if they've lied down and been beaten 30-3 every single week. When they made the decision to draft the quarterback back in April, it changed the dynamic completely because you got to get the rookie quarterback out there. And they did. So it changes the dynamic of it. But the coach isn't going to tell you that because he's not going to sit on here and sound like a whiner and worry about things like that. There are plenty of things to be optimistic about for the long term of this team. But, you know, I got to tell you, I am sick and tired of looking at this team losing and worried about it selling tickets. You know, because when they lose, I'm thinking the next game, man, how are they going to sell tickets? That starts to weigh on you. If people will just be patient and let things evolve, one more year, they're that close.
Right.
But they've got to have some receivers who can stretch it. Man, it's so easy to stop this team because you know who you got to stop. You got to stop 32. So don't go blame it on the tackle. Eben Britton can't help the fact that his back isn't ready to go. They rushed him back into the lineup because they needed him. And they put him at guard because they needed him. Because Will Rackley's hands weren't perfect. They needed him. And he went back in there. Eugene can't help it that he's got a stinger. He's playing fine. And I'm telling you, you are so wrong on Tyson Alualo. I wanted to hang up on you. The kid is playing big time. And what about the kid next door to him, Terrence Knighton? Dominant. Dominant player. Inconsistent at times. Dominant.
The bottom line is everything. I mean, it's so hard to say because you're 2-6. But every spot on the roster is playing well enough to win, and with the exception of the passing offense.
Yeah.
And it, not to be 7-1, but to be 4-4 or 5-3, without question they could be that, and we'd be sitting here talking about, boy, this is going to be an exciting second half of the season. But the receiving core as a group, for whatever reason, has not gotten it done. And to say that Eugene Monroe is not playing well, I get that. I get tons of emails along those lines, and I get that that's the theory out there. He played fairly well his first couple years, and everybody who's watching tape will tell you he's playing the best football he's ever played,
and
he is
Suggs.
Not a liability.
Suggs got a sack because the quarterback drifted into him.
Right.
Because he stepped up into the pocket in the wrong direction. His footwork wasn't all there.
And he is not just a guy. He's not a Pro Bowl guy yet, but he is not just a guy.
Lee, you are a long-term caller to this show, and we value you. Don't let the emotion overcome. And I know it's an emotional game, but take a really good hard look. And for goodness sakes, be careful who you listen to and who you read when it comes to the evaluations of these players. Because there's a lot of knuckleheads on the radio that watch it on TV and just say whatever they think. But they don't talk to the right people, and they don't know. And I am telling you, Tyson Alualu is a dominant player who's playing on one leg. He's a three technique, and his move is to get up the field, and he is disruptive and dominant as can be.
And there's no way that you can look at the defense and not believe it's a good defense. And this defense does not play well if its two tackles are not playing well. And it doesn't show up in the numbers, and there's going to be, you know, I haven't seen him get sacks or this and that are going to be the arguments, but this line does not play well, and his defense as a unit does not play well if the tackles are not playing well. There's a reason that Paul Posluszny has 100 tackles.
You bet. And one final thing, and then I'll let you have something. I'll stop talking and let you speak. There's one target in the downfield passing game besides Mercedes, and Mercedes right now is not dependable. I think he will be, but there's one guy, it's Mike Thomas. And Mike, on a good team, on a good receiving core, is a three. He's a slot guy. But that's it. That's all this quarterback has. So everything is going to look dysfunctional until they are complete. And they won't be complete until they have another round of free agency in the draft. But if you want to see competence, look at what they did in getting Dwight Lowry for a seventh-round pick. And boy, would the Jets like to have him now. So the final word is yours.
Oh, Brian, I appreciate your arguments and the passion that you bring, and I still love you. Obviously, you guys, you know, you're connected, and you know all these things, and it's just the frustration of.
And what you heard was my frustration.
Not seeing it play out on the field the way we want to see
Lee,
it.
Lee, let me tell you something now.
And that's difficult for everybody, Lee.
It is.
Don't get me wrong.
And what you heard was my frustration. And you've been on this show enough, we know each other well enough, that you know we can part friends, and this is not anything that's going to last. I will tell you this, is that if you told me today that the Jaguars would win 3 or 4 more games and be in a position to draft that playmaker that will change the dynamic, right? That will give them 10 years of winning, like the Colts, right? I'd say, fine, I'll accept that. I see where this is. I understand the talent that's in place and where it's going. I'll trade. I don't want to. I want people in the stands. I want people to be excited about this franchise. But if they have to just keep grinding it out with the idea that next spring they will come up with that playmaker, one in free agency and one in the draft, I'm patient. Because, Lee, I'm telling you, as sure as I'm sitting here, this is close. It's not complete, but it's close. And we need you and people like you, long-term, loyal, dedicated fans, to see the big picture from 10,000 feet and understand that your time is close. It's coming.
Fair enough, Brian. Thank you.
I appreciate you very much, Lee. 355-NFL-1. All right, well, somebody had to play Vic tonight. I guess it was me. We're back after this on Jaguars Radio. All right. Welcome back. I got it off my chest, didn't I? I mean,
stretch run, baby.
Yeah, poorly. You know, I mean, he walked right into that thing. But I think when you look at the big picture here, there's just no one wants to. 2-6, it sucks.
Right?
It's not good for anybody. It's no fun. But
and you always sound like you're explaining things when you're 2-6. And
I'm tired of looking at it. I am tired of every time they lose a ball game wondering will there be anyone in the stands and will it push it that much closer, you know, to a decision on Los Angeles. I'm tired of that.
And they get, I mean, I haven't talked to Jack in the last couple of weeks about it, but I talked to Gene this week, and he gets that people get tired of hearing about progress.
Yep.
He knows that you're building long-term, but in the short-term, you got to show results. And his quote to me yesterday, and I'll be writing about this later in the week, you know, you got to show some progress. And when you're not winning, it's hard to believe there's progress. It's hard for people to believe it. But there is. And, you know, he knows at some point you got to win to prove it. But, you know, there is progress.
Well, and I'll say it again. The receivers are not helping this football team right now. They are a far cry from where that group needs to be, and everyone knows it. So there's no use saying, well, they'll get back. Hey, look, they thought they were going to get stronger play this year from them, and they're not. Okay, well, they knew it was a long rebuild, and when you look at that collection of talent, you understand that there's not enough talent there. They need more talent there, and they're going to fix that problem. They just can't do it all at once.
Right.
355-NFL-1. Clay is in Riverside. Clay, welcome to the show. Clay.
One comment and then an honest question.
Sure.
You know, no defensiveness. I think part of the frustration is the NFL is such a parity league. I think we're going on, I think it's 9 straight years of a team going from worst to first in its division. And so it gets hard for us as fans for a 3-year rebuilding process to now be a 4-year slog. And we look around the league and say, gosh, why are we slogging it rather than being one of these, you know, worst to first or second best to best? So
but you know the answer, right? But you know the answer, right?
Well, I mean, I assume that the answer is right way versus wrong way, you know, long-term building versus short-term, you know, pop-up.
Well,
right?
Is, you know, the Jaguars, for all the criticism around this team, the one truth about the Jaguars is they've never been awful. You know, they've always been 7-9, 8-8. Even these last couple of years when, from my understanding, was there was not really the talent to suggest that they were going to be an 8-8 team a couple of those years, and yet they fought and they won.
Right.
That is great because you're fighting and you're winning, and that's what you want, but it does not lend itself to what the Lions have done, which is, you know, their core players were taken
0-16 followed by 2-14.
And their core players were taken in the top 3 or 4.
Right.
There is a difference there. It is harder to rebuild from 8-8 than it is from 2-14.
Well, and here's the other point, Clay, and you say slogging through, and at this point last year, that's exactly what they were doing, and then they went on a run, and they won 5 of 6, and they had a shot at the division title on December 20th when we went to Indianapolis, but they went there with David Garrard with a hamstring, and we know Maurice Jones-Drew played that day but didn't play the rest of the season. So, yeah, I get it, slogging it out, you know, not going worst at first, but they were close to it last year. Here's my answer. They didn't have a quarterback. I like David Garrard, but he wasn't the quarterback that was going to take this thing to the next level. They do have that guy now, and he needs time. But that's why he's in there now.
And help.
Oh, yeah, help for sure. He needs time, and the time is going to be earned on the field. And I've had people call and text and tweet, if you had David. No, you're going back to what he did last year before he got hurt. But you're not seeing the way that he performed in training camp. And he wasn't healthy. So, no. And how long do you hang on to that? The thing is, the slogging is about to end here. It's not that far away. They just need more help for their quarterback. Meanwhile, see what they do over the second half of the season. Get the frustration. You can hear it in my voice, too. Man, I call every game, every play of every game in this team's history. And the last couple of years have not been that much fun. But when you look at the pieces that are in play, I'm giving you total belief and conviction in the way that Gene has approached this. And I have to, because I believe it. I see it. I'm just sharing it with you. I see a team that's ready to turn around and be a consistent winner long term because they've done it right. Now, you said you had a question.
Yes, yeah, I appreciate it. And I think that's a great lead into the question. So talking about the pieces and trying to hopefully give us some hope, I'll say, so 12 teams make the playoffs. I'd love to hear in what positions or what units would you say the Jaguars are in the top 12 or on the way to being in the top 12? Yeah, running back and kicker, I think, are home runs. I would have said tight end going into this year. I now start to doubt that. Defensive tackle.
Well, don't doubt it yet. Don't doubt it. Nope. Because Lewis is a really, really good football player. He's struggling, but maybe he gets it turned around. He hasn't lost the talent. There's something missing. He's going through a slump, and lots of great players have done it over their time. I would say the defensive line as a whole is a top 12 group.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you could argue that the ends are right now.
Not individually.
The
but
tackles are. You know, I would, even when they signed these guys, I don't know that I would have said linebacker. After watching them this year, I'd say they're about as good as about as good at linebacker as a 4-3 team is. Secondary, they're okay. They're good. I mean, top 12, I'm not sitting here.
We'd have to go back and look at every team
but
and really give you an
analytical
approach
to it. They're playing well, but certainly linebacker and defensive tackle.
Well, look.
I don't think there's any question they are.
Just look at it this way then, okay? We'll look at the statistical rankings, and I know that they're a little bit skewed because, you know, if a team is really good against the pass, their run numbers, right?
Right.
You know, might be inflated. But look at this. They're 10th rushing, but they're 32nd overall and 32nd passing, so the passing attack doesn't go there. But they're 7th overall on defense. They're 14th against the run, and they are 8th against the pass. And so, you know,
And I would even argue that
if they were top 12, they'd probably be a playoff team. But I would say that most of their units are probably, when we're talking about the linebackers and the secondary and the tight end and the running back and the kicking game, top 15 for sure.
I would say the linebackers are top five.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, you have to separate 3-4 and 4-3 linebackers. But their 4-3 linebackers are very, very good. Pozlesny, I'm not sure there is a pure middle guy playing better this year.
It's hard to argue for.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I haven't seen everybody in the league. But, and Clint's playing very well right now. I mean, now that he has come around, those three are playing very, very well. And, you know, I think they're a better run defense than their stats indicate, and maybe not as good a pass defense as their stats indicate. But they're pretty good. You know, they're playing well enough in both of those phases to be winning.
Well, and the reason that I like their defensive front, and look, they don't have that premier
right.
Terrell Suggs. Pass rusher, and those guys, truthfully, are as hard to find as the quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
These days. I mean, look, they spent all that draft capital to go up and get Derek Harvey.
Right.
And if you watch Derek when he played in Gainesville, you saw a guy that dominated the
right.
line of scrimmage. What he did to Ohio State was criminal, right?
Right.
He tore him apart. Didn't do it in the NFL. But I like the tackles. I like the depth they have at tackle. You
mm-hmm.
saw C.J. Mosley in the other day. You know, Jeremy Mincy brings it every single play. And John Chick is a nice situational pass rusher. Campman is an older guy who's still struggling to come back. I like Austin Lane as a rotational guy.
They're probably as good as you can be
without that dominant
player. Without a superstar defensive end.
Although I think those two tackles are sensational. One guy needs to
I
be
agree.
Healthy, and the other guy needs to be a little bit more consistent.
Yeah.
All the way around. So appreciate the call, Clay. And we are absolutely out of time. I enjoyed this.
Who needs the big guys?
Yeah, well, there's more time.
We do.
There's
we
more.
Do.
Yeah, no, they'll be back next week, and we'll roll on with that without a doubt. Parting thought?
Well,
for the bye week?
I see Tom with a call says, love regardless. And I think that's the spirit of this show. You know, we're obviously frustrated. Everybody's frustrated. And, you know, I think you just have to believe it's going in the right direction because right. the eye test tells you it is.
And when you talk to people around the league,
yeah.
they'll tell you it is.
Absolutely.
And they ultimately are the best judge because those talented people, the personnel guys, they do it for a living.
Hang in there.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate all your phone calls and contributions. Lee, we love you. Have a great night, everybody.